Hey there, influencer, and welcome to part one of my interview with Yannick Silver. Yannick is the founder and CEO of Maverick 1000, a global invitation-only group for industry-transforming entrepreneurs. And in this interview, I talk with Yannick about how to determine, before committing to something, whether it's a diversion or whether it's actually something that's going to help you move towards your goal. We talked about when corporate philanthropy is a gimmick and when it is actually real, and partnerships with nonprofits and how to make sure that you do it right. And of course, we talked about how to truly love yourself and why that is so incredibly important for your business.
This is Esther Kish.
And this is Meta Muller.
And you just caught the latest episode of Born to Influence, the marketing show.
Hi there, Yannick. How are you?
Hi, Meta. How's it going?
Good, good. Thanks. And Yannick, to those people who've been living under a rock and have not heard of you before, could you just give us a bit of an introduction to who you are, how you got started in the entrepreneurial world, and what exactly you're doing at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I'd imagine there's quite a few people that don't know who I am. Kind of the way that I really define myself is someone who's helping redefine business in the 21st century, where not only am I helping entrepreneurs get more revenue and create more profits in their business to take them to the next level, but really help them enhance their lifestyle and their joy and happiness, and how do they create an impact on the world. So I know we share a lot of those same values. And, you know, kind of quick summary, I guess, is back in 2000, I had an idea at 3 o'clock in the morning, which turned into a site called Instant Sales Letters, which was my first $1 million product. And from there, kind of people were like, well, how did you do that? And maybe you could teach me. And that turned into me helping other people take their expertise and knowledge and sell it online. So I've sold, you know, everything from ebooks to membership sites to coaching programs to live events. You know, you pretty much name it. Been involved in that world. And about 6-7 years ago, I kind of looked at what I was doing, and I was making a really, really good amount of money. You know, on the surface, everything was great, had a great family, great reputation in the marketplace, but I wasn't totally happy. And so those three interconnected circles that I mentioned before, so the make more, have more fun, and give more, like, so that really became something that I wanted to focus on even more and deeper, and that turned into this Maverick group of companies, which is all about helping entrepreneurs get there.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. And what exactly, like, what were you missing exactly? Because it sounds like you weren't 100% fulfilled. You know, you had the money and success and everything, but what exactly was missing?
I think what was missing, and it's been about a 6-7 year process, is figuring out, you know, what is, I believe that, you know, a lot of people that I talk to and interact with, they believe that they're destined for greatness, and not in an egotistical way, but in a way that there's a lot of resources and talent and service available to help really change the course of a river instead of just pushing more water down the river, as one of my friends has told me. And so that was the process of me kind of figuring out, okay, you know, just being an internet marketing guru, quote unquote, that wasn't going to cut it for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
But how can I make a much bigger impact? And so that was what it was. That was that gnawing feeling of that you're kind of destined or designed for something bigger.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned that you do believe that everyone is designed and is here for something bigger. Why is everybody not successful then, if that's the case? What's stopping people from really making those big leaps and making a bigger impact in the world and getting more success for themselves and more fulfillment for themselves as well?
Well, there's probably a couple things. One is, as much as we don't want to always admit it, it starts with ourselves and who we are. So one of my friends who's a venture-backed CEO in Silicon Valley and a venture capitalist, this guy Kamal Ravikant, he wrote this great book called Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends on It. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, you know, out of nowhere became this really nice bestseller for him because it was so raw and authentic, where, you know, he's this on the surface very successful CEO, but he you know, was dealing with these massive bouts of depression and what to do. And so he went through this process of really loving himself, and that got him through it. And it was interesting. It's like one of those things that I didn't even want to maybe necessarily even admit to myself, mm-hmm. where I'm like, you know, I think I really like myself a lot, but even like one of the little exercises he has you doing there where you look in the mirror and just tell yourself, I love you, or mm-hmm. I love myself for 5 minutes. It's like, sounds so silly and so stupid. And like the first time I did it, it was really hard. Yeah. And then, then doing it, it got better and easier and easier. And so a lot of these things come from, like, they're all so interrelated, right? Because if we do truly love ourselves, aren't we going to make sure that we're on our right path and our true path, and that there's nothing that's going to be able to stop us? And, you know, one of the other things that I didn't necessarily want to admit to myself was that I've never until now really given 100% of my true full effort and talent and heart into anything. And it sounds a little silly. So I've had all these success, you know, I've written a bunch of books. I've, you know, all these things happen, but, and I can look back to like when I was in college, like I would go out the night before for a big exam. I don't know, probably get drunk, show up literally the last person into the exam, borrow a pencil from one of my buddies and be the first person out. And I'd get a very solid B. And it's not because I'm this, you know, brilliant genius. It's just, you know, I was pretty decent at short-term memory and I was fairly smart, but not off the charts smart, I don't think. But that sort of same process has stuck with me forever, where it's just like there wasn't anything that I truly, truly wanted to give my full heart and soul to, and that has changed recently with some, you know, just some insights that I've had.
Yeah. Exactly. And I was just, I really love this this talk that we're having here. I was just reading Gay Hendricks' The Big Leap, I think it's called, the other day, about your upper limit and about how we often, because we don't have this deep love and affection for ourselves, that we do sabotage our own success eventually in some way if we don't sort of take a look at the ways in which we don't truly love ourselves. So Yannick, yeah. could you talk a bit about what could sort of, if, you know, people out there, I'm pretty sure that nobody's really saying, no, I don't love myself. Like, what are we looking for here? When, in which kinds of situations do we often not love ourselves? Or what is a symptom? What does it look like when we don't love ourselves truly?
I mean, there's some little things that happen all the time, like when we say yes and we should say no.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times as entrepreneurs, we're very opportunity oriented and we're like, oh, great, that sounds like a perfect, you know, opportunity and I need to take it now, especially as you start gaining momentum and you gain more success. There's even more opportunities that come your way. And so you got to get clear on, OK, is this going to get me to where I really want to go, or is this, you know, just really a side road and a diversion? Now, I am a big fan of throwing out some little bets and seeing what hits and what gets the traction and then, you know, figuring out, you know, maybe that is a better road. Like, for instance, my very first site, that Instant Sales Letters that I mentioned, like my goal for it was to sell it for $500,000 to like a stamps.com or something like that. But that I didn't want to do that once I got it going, because it really started turning into a nice moneymaker and B, just a credibility and authority booster to go kind of this other direction of helping other people do what they wanted to do online. So, you know, I think that's one of the things is saying no and getting that clarity. Also, like, coming up with a business, like molding your – I look at entrepreneurs as artists, and that might sound a little bit crazy.
No, I love it.
So that we can – you know, we start with this blank sort of canvas, which is a potential business, and the closer and closer we start – adding our own true essence and our real personality and our real authenticity behind it, you know, the better it becomes as an expression of ourselves. And that's, you know, that's when you start knowing what to say yes to and what to say no to. And of course, you know, some people just really love, I don't know, the business side of things and can look at very pragmatically assess marketplaces and be like, okay, well, these are the ones I want to go to. But the people that I really enjoy hanging out with are the ones that really do put their full heart and their entire essence into something that they're putting out there. And I've seen this, you know, now more and more start coming together. I see this like tipping point going on in the 21st century where you truly can make a dramatic difference, and your business will explode because of it. And you look at companies like Tom's Shoes, or there's a company called Sevenly.org where they donate $7 for, it started with just t-shirts, and now they have other things there. They donate $7 for different causes. Only about a year and a half or 2 years now, I mean, a tiny bit more, maybe 2.5 years, but they've donated, I think, $3 million. And so I have this new thing that I've been coining called Evolved Enterprises. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to have a business as a multiplier for good and co-create something great.
And I do want to talk to you a bit more about that, but just before we move on to the topic of impact and philanthropy and changing the world, I do want to ask you, because in one of your ebooks I was reading, I think was Maverick Rules or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was rule number 6, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. And you mentioned that you get to set the rules in your business. You are the one who chooses the direction of your business, who to work with, and so forth. Is that like how do we do that in a way how do we know when is it our true selves that is leading the process, and when is it our inner brat that just doesn't want to do the work?
that's an interesting one, right? The inner brat. I don't know. I mean, I know for the rules part is somewhat controversial, or people are like, well, no, I have to do this, or I have to work with so-and-so. Yeah. And it's not the case. Like, I was literally sitting at having coffee with this 19-year-old kid last night who's talking about a new business that he wants to start, and he loves the outdoor world and the adventure world. And so, you know, he'd hooked up with me, and I told him, you know, we really got down to what his true, what he really, really wanted to do. And he's like, well, how do you, you know, he wanted to take people. Eventually what we got down to is to take families on these really unique ski trips and make it father-son or father-daughter unique bonding ski trips, because he grew up in a very affluent family. And, you know, that wasn't always the case. And so he has access to other affluent families that they're not spending enough time with their kids, or they're busy entrepreneurs that feel guilt, or executives. And so I told him, you know, well, why don't you change around the entire process and the dynamics of getting these customers? So instead of them feeling like they could just call up any travel agent and book this ski trip, that they have to actually qualify, and they got to, you know, you have to interview them and make sure that they're a fit, and so that they play nicely with everyone else and they actually have something they bring to the table and so forth. And that was like a big revelation to him, was that, oh, I don't have to work with, you know, people that are kind of jerks, because not everybody who has, you know, if they're going to go on these high-end trips, that doesn't mean that they are going to be necessarily the two people that you want to work with. And so, you know, his inner brat, I guess, could have been saying, well, I don't want to work with this particular group. But at the same time, I think it makes a lot of good business sense, because there's, you know, that passion comes through, and that it just makes everything better. And, you know, that also goes back to our self-esteem in a way, because if we're willing to say no to either firing customers, like I belong to a group here in DC. It's called an unnetworking group, and the guy who runs it, he's also a Maverick member, and he fires people repeatedly just for not being active. And I think it makes everything else stronger inside the group. So, you know, it's just a way of being willing what you're going to tolerate and what you're not. And I don't think it's being bratty at all.
Yeah. Exactly. So passion and not tolerating, really. So let's talk about philanthropy and changing the world. How do we do that?
Well, so I like to think of it as, you know, all of it is interconnected, right? Because the, you know, that company I was mentioning, Sevenly, and then Tom's Shoes, like they've actually sold 10 million pairs of shoes. So if Tom's is like, well, we give away 10% of our profits to children's charities or something like that, that would be cool, and that would probably raise their income, but it wouldn't have as big of an effect as what they've done now with their buy one, give one type program. And so I look at it from a pragmatic standpoint of, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, we're going to change the world, but it's another thing to actually create self-sustaining businesses that literally the profits are increasing because of the fact that we have impact and causes and different things authentically and genuinely baked into what we're doing. So that's where it gets exciting to me, is to put all of those together. And your customers have a better story to tell because they want to share that message because, you know, they just helped in some way. And it's very easy to get it to become a little bit more viral. And now, as we know, that you know, it's we're more connected than ever. So that story has an easier way of spreading if you give them the story. Your team members are more inspired than ever because you got a bigger mission. You know, your bottom line increases, and usually it's a business that comes out of your true essence. So that's what I think is going to be changing the world, is the entrepreneurs and the business innovators that can look at social issues and problems and figure out how are we going to bake that into a business that actually creates amazing value for the end users and the customers.
And so are you saying that, I mean, is it because I do see a lot of businesses who kind of, who do want to get into philanthropy and so forth, mainly for the sake of image and mainly for the sake of the bottom line and to tell a story. So it kind of becomes this additional thing that they put on top, but isn't really integrated into the business. What are your thoughts on that? Like when does it just become a gimmick and when is it real?
Yeah, that's a great question, because so I remember seeing one thing where they, like Kentucky Fried Chicken, KFC, they had buckets of chicken and they were pink buckets, and they donated 50 cents to breast cancer research, the Susan G. Komen Foundation. And, you know, I think most people could see pretty much right through that, where there really wasn't a tie-in. Though one of my friends finally showed me where the tie-in was, that they sell breasts of chicken, and I guess that's what the tie-in is. And I'm like, huh, all right, I didn't get that. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't make sense anyway. And so it really is just, you know, that on the surface level, like there's got to be a reason for it in a tie-in. And, you know, that's why I like Tom's Shoes, is that they give away a pair of shoes. Now, they've come under some criticism lately with that they're in fact impacting and influencing marketplaces in the areas where they give away shoes, that local merchants can't, you know, sell shoes, or it's impacting the marketplace there. And so they've been listening, and they're like setting up a factory in Haiti and so forth. And it's pretty interesting. But you know, I think we can all sort of, like, there's an underlying energy maybe, or just this underlying current of what business owners are doing, or big companies are doing, when we know if it's just literally for a bit of PR, a bit of trying to tie it in. And one of the ways to know is how long does it stay around? You know, is it something that is like a month promotion, or is it something that truly is baked into what they're doing, and it becomes essential to their business model? So, for instance, one of the things that we've been tossing around for a while is that we want to give away 100,000 scholarships for all our educational material that we sell. And so the way that integrates is that we want to do a 3-for-1 scholarship. So if somebody buys one of our course materials, or right now we've been doing it with our underground seminar by giving away live streams, is we give them away, we work with different causes for different underserved communities, whether it's urban youth, or it's people that have been let out of prison, or it's returning military vets, or it's people with disabilities. And we're teaching them 21st century job skills. So whether it's SEO or Facebook advertising or something like that, and they then would become virtual interns to the business owners who bought the programs. So there's like a really nice integrated tie-in, because the business owner might not have the manpower or the time to go implement all these new 21st century marketing things, and then the people who've got the scholarships actually get real-world experience, and it becomes a really nice virtuous circle that is baked into what we're doing. It's not just kind of on a surface level thing. So that's one of the ways to think about it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I originally am from the nonprofit world. I worked for many years and with nonprofits in Kenya and Egypt. And one of our bigger programs was youth entrepreneurship and engaging youth through building their own businesses. And it was a huge problem for nonprofits, because The nonprofits themselves don't necessarily have entrepreneurial skills, right?
Right.
So for us, it was very much about partnering and so forth. And so what are your thoughts in terms of partnering between the private sector and the entrepreneurial business world and the more specialized nonprofit world who know everything about rights and sustainability and social change and who've got their feet on the ground and sort of know what's going on and so forth. What are your thoughts on partnerships in that sense between these two sectors?
So I'm glad you brought that up. I'm a huge fan of partners when it's done right. When somebody, you know, people have asked me before about partners in the business sense, and sometimes people bring on partners just because they don't want to be lonely in their business. But the best partners are ones where one person or one entity brings different skill sets or something to the table, and then the other person or entity brings something else to the table. And so that's exactly what I see with the nonprofits. And I get really excited because we do, with our Maverick 1000 group, is every single time we go to an event or we do an experience, that there's some sort of philanthropic element to it. Some are bigger than others. Like we might go to Haiti and we'll build a self-sustaining village there. And then there's some sort of microeconomic engine attached to the village. So it could be a fishing co-op. It could be a food cannery, something that makes it self-sustaining. So it's not just we're continuing to write checks, because that, you know, that's been the old model of charity. And that model is, I think, broken. Because it's not self-sustaining, and it's, you know, that just like the 80-20 rule, probably even more, might be the 90-10 rule. 10% of charities are probably, you know, doing really well with their funding from donors, but the rest are struggling, and they need to understand that if they can incorporate, you know, what businesses think about from that self-sustainment point, that profitability point, that adding a value driver. So I think it's going to be amazing, like this convergence going on between the different sectors, and you already see it kind of bleeding over with social entrepreneurs and even more, a little bit more mainstream, like conscious capitalism, with John Mackey from Whole Foods, who just came out with that book. Yeah. Like, so the conversations are definitely there, and I think the people on the ground who know how to measure impact and who can work with communities and all these different things, like they're going to be extremely valuable. They just have to be open and a little bit more innovative and, dare I say, even a little bit more entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
Who work with the entrepreneurs who aren't the rule followers and aren't used to doing things the right way. But putting them in the room together, I think, is going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And what about marketing? Because one of our, I remember when I was back in my nonprofit days, one of our biggest problems and biggest causes of conflict amongst the different departments was marketing. How do you market helping other people without placing or without positioning the people that you're helping as victims, but actually positioning them as incredibly empowered people who you are helping to empower further? How do you market nonprofit work and philanthropy in that sense?
Well, that's, I can give you, you know, from my marketing side of things, from what we've done, I haven't done that much in the nonprofit, the technically totally nonprofit world, but, you know, I know what has worked a lot is stories, and it works across the board everywhere. Is when we throw out stats of, you know, that 8 million people are going to, you know, suffer from this, whatever, over the course of 10 years or 5 years, that's not as impactful as hearing from somebody's story, because we connect, you know, one-on-one as from one person to another. And so having stories and using that is really incredible. And so whether it's, and this applies absolutely across the board for our businesses or for nonprofits or whatever we're trying to market, starting with our creation story. So why, you know, why did we even do this thing? Like what was the impetus to create the business or create the nonprofit, or, you know, what was the creation story? And then we start thinking about, okay, what's the story that we can help spread? Because if you can make it a very spreadable story, something that's easy to mobilize people around, and then it helps. So one of the nonprofits that I think has done a really interesting job, regardless of some of the controversy they got when they got even more popular, but was Fallen Whistles, where they have you can buy a whistle that would go around your neck and for $20 or $30, and it just forces the conversation. So I love these things that I call them conversation crutches or conversation catalysts, where, you know, it forces a conversation. So if somebody sees you walking around with a whistle, they're going to be like, well, what's that? And, you know, they might even make a joke about something else. But, you know, it forces you to have a conversation and say, oh, well, this is a whistle that, you know, Fallen Whistles is a charity that works with in the Congo, where kids aren't old enough to carry guns. And so they're given whistles in order to blow this whistle when they see, someone from enemy combatant over there with a gun. And so these kids end up getting killed in the jungle because they don't have any weapons that's all they're trained to do. And, you know, it's a pretty sad place. And now you can tell that story and it gets people talking about it. So I really love these kind of icons and things that become physical in a sense. So there's another company I can't remember their name, but I saw them in an airport kiosk and I thought it was really cool. They have keys, and on the key is written a few words like joy or hope or whatever it is. And they put, they put either ex-cons or homeless people to work making the keys. And the idea is that you're supposed to give this key to somebody that you see that needs that message.
Yeah.
And then they share it on their blog and so forth. I don't think they've gotten huge, but, you know, they've gotten some celebrity endorsements and different things like that. And it's really interesting because, once again, it's that whole baked in and it ties in. And there's a real connection between the stories of these messages.
Exactly. And it's more tangible as well. It almost becomes real. I mean, what you mentioned with the whistle, you're reminded of a person's everyday life
pretty
much. And I think that really does make a difference, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And if there's something that you can get somebody to wear, and like there's a nonprofit called Pachamama, which works in the Amazon. And Lynn Twist, who's a pretty famous activist, she started this, or she's co-founder of it. And if you become an advocate for it, they wrap these bracelets that were made by the indigenous people around your wrists. Sometimes it's multiple ones, and they say, wear this until it falls off. Mm. And it's, you know, it's something that is just there all the time, reminding you about it.
Yeah, exactly. So what are some of the, the challenges if a business owner wants to move into philanthropy and actually integrate all of that into their business, where to start, and what are some of the challenges, and what are some of the things that we really have to take note of and be careful with, maybe even when
yeah.
we start that avenue?
Well, one thing for sure is, you know, where is it coming from? Is it coming from, oh, I want to get some good PR and I think it can maybe even help my bottom line? Or is it coming from a place of, yes, absolutely, I think it can help my bottom line, but I want it to integrate and tie back into what we're really doing, mm-hmm. and tie back in a nice way. And so I kind of look at it as that, you know, maybe there's different even kind of levels of it, of evolved enterprises. And one could be, you know, we donate X amount. And I've had our Maverick members and different people I know do split tests where they put like a certificate on a website when they're selling something, and they'll say, you know, we donate, like this one guy I'm thinking in particular, he wrote, we donate $50 to these different nonprofits, and they actually increased their conversion by 10% on a $2,000 item in the options trading space. And so that was pretty cool, where that ended up not only helping their bottom line, but they were able to make a big contribution to a few different charities that they worked with. And you know, it wasn't even like a tie-in. It wasn't like, oh, you know, we're going to help provide financial literacy or anything like that. So there wasn't even a massive amount of congruency there, but there were good charities that he had worked with and he had a personal relationship with. So that's really interesting to me to see. We have another member, Maverick member, who has a pretty big call center. They take all the calls for Spanish-speaking infomercials. And so they did an upsell where they gave away, if you took the upsell, they would donate $1 to St. Jude's Hospital. And it was really interesting that they got a 17% increase in their upsell take rate, which, you know, increased their bottom line. Plus, they're able to obviously donate a whole lot to St. Jude's. And then they leverage it out to all these other call centers that were taking calls in English for the same products. And so now they're able to multiply even more. So that's really interesting to me. So that's kind of, you know, a lower level one maybe. And then it's thinking about, okay, now is there a way to bake in what we're doing? Maybe it's for even just a new product. It doesn't even have to be everything that we're doing. You know, start off in a smaller way. And the other thing is to think about who else do you have? What other resources do you have? So if you have your team, why not let them donate some of their talent in some way? We have an initiative that we started that is still kind of fledgling, but it's called 3% Forward at 3%forward.org. And the idea is to give away 3% of your time every week or every month, so your unique expertise, to any cause that you care about. And that can have a big leverage and a big multiplier effect. And so that turns out to, if it's a 40-hour work week, that could be as little as an hour 20. And you'll get, it's really interesting. So one of my friends, he teaches companies how to grow. And one of the things he gets them to do is to really tap back into their mission and why they created the company in the first place. And one of the exercises that they do, and now it becomes kind of an annual or semi-annual thing, is that they have all their team members volunteer at, you know, for one day all together with a cause that they pick. And whether or not they publicize it or not, it actually brings their whole team together. And that's really interesting. And it gets them even more engaged because they're doing something a little bit bigger. I mean, we're all wired that way, is to believe in and get attracted to something that's bigger than just ourselves individually. And so that's one way of getting your team connected along those lines, and to think about that. And,
yeah,
you know, I think at the highest level of being an involved enterprise, you think about how to become almost like a multiplier to light multiple suns around your community or around yourself. And, you know, whether that means working with your supplier chain and figuring out, you know, can we bring in, I don't know, people with disabilities who've been trained by nonprofits that provide job skills, or can we buy from, you know, someone else that, you know, you just start picking apart what you're doing, and you just realize that you have a lot of influence as an entrepreneur and as a business owner in so many different categories.
I love that. And it's so much more about, because I think that's sort of where the disconnect starts a little bit, is a lot of the time it's just about, oh, I give 1% to charity.
Right.
It feels a bit disconnected because, you know, you just go about your daily life. You don't really think further about it, and that's kind of it. It's just money, which is fine as well. But what you're saying is that it's a lot more engaging, and in my view at least, you become a lot more influential because you're out there and you're giving something quite tangible to a cause as well. And I really like what you're saying about engaging your team as well. I really do think that the feeling of fulfillment, or the feeling that you are part of something bigger, and that you yourself, not just the money that the company it gets in terms of profit, but that you yourself are actually part and parcel of you know, bringing value to someone else's life, I think is incredibly, incredibly important. So thank you for sharing that. That's really amazing. And I also do think in today's world, that as business owners, we do have a responsibility. One thing is, donating to nonprofit and social change causes, but also to make sure that our business is not destroying the world, so to say, that the products that we use, what our processes and so forth are sustainable in and of themselves. What are your thoughts on that? Do we have to sort of, you know, because it is difficult to, that every single thing you do in your business is 100% sustainable and rights-based and all these things. Where's the balance? How do you not go crazy in all this?
So that concludes part one of this interview with Yannick Silver, but not to worry, we'll be back with part two tomorrow. Now, in the meantime, I want to thank you so much for all the beautiful emails and Facebook messages that Esther and I have been getting. It's it's so incredibly nice to have that feedback and know that we're doing something right here at Born to Influence. Also, if you do me a little favor and hop on over to iTunes or Stitcher Radio, wherever you're listening to this, and hit the subscribe button, it really helps us get Born to Influence higher up on the chart so more entrepreneurs and business owners can find out about these kind of cool interviews. And while you're at it, do go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. Esther and I will just absolutely love you for it. So thank you, and I'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place.